There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad you're along and lots to do on today's show. And good to get started with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. We're talking this morning about the Justice Act coming out of Senator Scott's office. And good to see the story that had Senator Shelby and our representative, Bradley Byrne, signing on with Senator Scott on this. And Bradley Byrne joining us right now. Thanks for your time.
Sean, it's good to be with you.
Good to have you here, too. So I won't even go on my rant about the acronyms coming out of Washington, but the Just and Unifying Solutions to Invigorate Communities Everywhere Act, Justice Act. Tell us about it.
Well, we knew the Democrats were going to come up with a pretty far-left policing bill, and they didn't even reach out to us at all. We actually asked to be included. They wouldn't do it. They refused to have us involved. And we said, okay, if they're going to go their own way, then we need to come up with what we think is the right solution. And so there were people in the Republicans in the House and the Senate working on this, but the person who led it was Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina, who's a friend and somebody I have a lot of respect for, and I think he brings a unique perspective to it. So I was glad that he came out with his bill in the Senate. We come up with a companion bill in the House, and I was happy to be one of the original co-sponsors of it. Now, what we do, which is different from the Democrats, is that we respect the prerogatives of local governments where the vast majority of these law enforcement officers work. And we also understand that you need police. I mean, you just defund the police thing is stupid. We need police. We need for them to be better trained. We need for them to have better equipment. But we need police. So we have a respect for police in the attitude that we have in our bill, which I think some Democrats don't like police. They just don't respect them. So we have a different approach to it from the Democrats, and I'm glad we put it out there.
Yeah, you mentioned the defund police, and as soon as I heard that, I've been talking about this on the shows, because they should have been on the street saying fund police or demand higher standards, demand better action from law enforcement, but give them the means to do that. It seems contrary to ask for these reforms, these improvements, at the same time you're saying, and we're going to take money away.
Well, it was interesting to me over the course of last week, three key members of the Congressional Black Caucus came out against the defunding police movement. And one of them was Eleanor Holmes Norton, who represents she's the delegate from the District of Columbia. And she literally said, if you go into the poor neighborhoods that I represent, and they're overwhelmingly minority, they would probably want to have more police, not less police, because that's where most of the bad crime occurs. And she made a very important point. And so I don't understand why she said that, and I agree with her. Then you look at the Democrats' bill, it's like, no, wait a minute, now you're trying to take away qualified immunity from police officers, mm-hmm. which means they'll get sued right and left. You're trying to make it easy for people to go after and prosecute police officers when you can already prosecute a police officer, by the way. It happens. It happened in Minneapolis. So there's just some things in their bill that make me very uneasy about the approach that they're taking to law enforcement. I do not believe that the vast majority of our law enforcement officers are either racist or unprofessional. I deal with law enforcement all the time and in my position, and I find them all, the ones that I deal with, to be very professional, and I've never seen or heard a single racist thing from them. Are there some bad actors out there? Of course there are. I mean, there are tens of thousands of law enforcement officers in America, and you're going to find some bad guys in that group, no question about it. But I just don't like this broad brush, all the police are all bad, they're all racist. I don't accept that. And I think the bill proceeds from that presumption.
Well, and I think I would hope most Americans, whatever political ideology they have, when somebody comes out and says all of this group is bad, and all, they would at least stop and go, really, you know, I mean, it's not realistic. And I mean, from their personal interactions or just playing the odds, the fact is, the majority of people will do right in any group.
Well, I wish some of the people that are so critical of police would get in a squad car and ride around with one of them. Mm-hmm. And watch what their job is really like. Imagine getting a phone call at 10 o'clock at night, you're a police officer, and there's a domestic disturbance at a house, and you've got to go walk into a very volatile situation. You don't know if somebody's going to pull out a gun or not. I mean, it's an incredible job that they do. We lost over 80 officers last year mm-hmm. nationwide. And we lost some in Alabama, as you yeah. know. And this is a tough job. They're not paid enough do what they do, and yeah, they probably need better training. And if they're bad actors, then we need to make sure the police departments around the country are empowered to get rid of them, because we have to have good, strong law enforcement for everybody's sake.
Yeah, you talked about the Democrats not bringing y'all in on this, not working with you. In that, I think what a major mistake that is, because in what I've heard from the Justice Act and what's being asked by groups like Black Lives Matter, there are some things there's commonality on. And I've, you know, this has frustrated me over time, when there's commonality there, something that is good and right, that it's going to be linked to things that will be a deal breaker for both sides, instead of just moving forward, like the idea of having that record, right? Having that searchable database. So somebody in law enforcement that messes up and is done wrong can't go down the road to another state and get a job without it coming up and them seeing that. I think that's something everybody can agree on.
Yeah, I mean, the anti-lynching provisions, we all agree on that.
Yeah.
The fact that we need to tie the federal funding we give to municipalities and local governments to an adequate training program. These are all, to me, common sense things. The fact that they didn't even respond to our entreaties to say, let us be a part of this, shows you that they're not really about finding a solution. And Senator McConnell has already said that Democratic bill is not going to be brought up in the Senate. So if we really want a law, you work with the people on the other side of the aisle. So I don't really think they want a law. I think they just want to make a messaging bill out of this. And I think that's sad, because we need to make some legal changes in America.
Right. And messaging bills, I mean, election year, messaging bills are going to happen. But it seems like there would be some areas to go, all right, we know how things work here, but on this, and look at our nation right now, let's come together on these things we can agree on and get a package, bipartisan package, passed. Y'all do agree on things, get those items in there and get them passed, and then go back to fighting about the other stuff.
That's just not their goal here, obviously. We want a solution. We want a solution that gets to the president's desk, that he signs, and becomes the law of the United States of America. If they wanted that, then they would have said, okay, Republicans want to work with us, let's work with them. And they've done the opposite.
You know, you mentioned the qualified immunity part of it, and this has been thrown out. Can you, for someone like me, explain what that means?
Yeah, this is something the Supreme Court of the United States developed decades ago. What it says is that a law enforcement officer, when he or she is acting under color of law, is given qualified immunity. That means they can't be sued, but it's qualified because there are exceptions to that. And so if you act with intent to deprive somebody of their rights or to hurt somebody, something like that, then you can be sued. So it's qualified only in the sense that you have to have a fairly high threshold in order to get around the immunity. So think about why we have that. How many times would a police officer get sued if it was just open season off? I mean, every time they arrest somebody, mm-hmm. they're going to have some lawyers going to file a lawsuit against them. So the whole idea about immunity is to give them that protection, so they're not sitting there when they're out there doing their job saying, well, gee, maybe I shouldn't arrest that guy because I might get sued. I mean, you know, you don't want that. So the Democrats want to take away qualified immunity from law enforcement officers, which is a huge mistake. I would agree with them that it could probably be better stated, and I think we could clarify the law in that area by putting it in the statute, which would be good for everybody. But they don't want to talk about that. They just want to do away with it. There's this sort of knee-jerk reaction from them every time something happens, and they just kind of go to the furthest extreme. And then when we say, no, wait a minute, let's try to walk through that, they say, no, we're not, it's not negotiable. Well, what do you mean it's not negotiable? I mean, this qualified immunity doctrine has been around for decades. And you just want to wipe it out in one fell swoop? I just don't think that's reasonable.
No, it doesn't seem reasonable to have law enforcement still doing their jobs. And, I mean, just the members of law enforcement I've talked to, they said, like you were saying, if the cases people are paying attention to here, talking about, those were violations of the rules set up by those police forces or those sheriff's departments, and they aren't covered by qualified immunity.
Correct. I mean, if you listen to professional law enforcement, they'll tell you that the tactics that were used in Minneapolis are not accepted tactics. And when you go outside of that, then you are wide open to be sued, wide open, obviously, to be prosecuted criminally, which is the right way to handle it. But what we're about to wander into, if we follow where the Democrats are going to go, is that we're going to put our law enforcement officers in a position where before they go into any situation, they got to sit there and say, all right, what was that legal training I have for the lawyer about what I've got to make sure I do so I don't get sued? I mean, we don't want that. They make literally split-second type determinations out there in violent situations where they're there to protect innocent lives. And if they got to sit there and run through all these legal do's and don'ts because they may get sued, and heck, I think they'll pull back. And guess who's going to get hurt when they pull back?
Yeah, citizens.
People will get hurt. It's going to be poor people. That's who's going to get hurt.
All right. Can you hold on over the news break?
Sure.
All right. I just got a second here. We'll be right back. More with Congressman Bradley Byrne. I'm talking about this act. I'm going to put the link up as well. You can see more of this on our social media platforms. It is Senator Tim Scott's bill that has support from Senator Shelby. Also, a lot of work here and support of our Congressman Bradley Byrne. It's called the Justice Act.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Good to have this conversation with our Congressman, AL1's Bradley Byrne, as you look at the subject. You heard it last night. People have been talking about it today. This Justice Act, Senator Scott's bill that he presented on the other day. It's good to have AL1 connected to this. So well done being part of this bill.
Thanks. This bill has been it wasn't just a snap thing. We've worked on it for some time now. And I can't thank Tim Scott enough for his leadership because, as I say, he's got a unique perspective, and it was good for us to listen to his perspective and let him be our leader on it. So I think it's the right thing to do. I think they're going to get something like that out of the Senate. Then the question is, you know, the House will pass this Democratic bill that goes too far. Can we conference it and get to a bill that we can all agree on and get to the president? I don't know. I don't know if the Democrats are willing to do that.
But that's where it's going to be. I mean, if there's not some conferencing goes on this, then none of these things will happen. I mean, so we know that we have a situation right now, and we're looking to Congress, we're looking to the House, we're looking to the Senate to do things. This is a conversation you and I have had so many times, but my gosh, I think the American people need to say, hey, find the things you can come to some agreement on here, and let's get those passed, and then circle back and work on the rest of it.
You know, when we pass something in a bipartisan fashion, it becomes law. Everybody feels so good about it. And I keep telling my colleagues, look, if it feels so good when we pass something, why don't you want to do it more often? I mean, I think we're getting ready to pass a bipartisan National Defense Authorization Act, I'll know in the next couple of weeks. And every time we do that, everybody on the committee, all the Democrats, we all feel great. Well, why do we do that on more pieces of legislation? It's because they've got people that are not in the House, not in the Senate, these groups, off Capitol Hill groups, that put tremendous pressure on them to go after this crazy stuff. And it's not helping the nation. It's not helping the people who really do need some help.
Yeah, I mean, it's an idea that, correct me if I'm wrong, and I know it's going to be different for different cases, but if you would, you know, conference and work on these things and get the things that there are some agreement passed by, don't expect support from this group or that group when it comes election time.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's
is there truth to that? Is there truth to that?
We've got these groups that people feel like they've got to cater to the groups than to their constituents. And I told people all the time, I don't care what the group was. I hear them and I listen to them, but that's not who I represent. I don't represent those groups. I represent the people in Southwest Alabama, and I've got to think about this from their perspective. What's the best thing for them? And too many people go to Washington and don't think that way. They just, you know, the groups control them, and I just never saw myself like that. I always knew at the end of the day, if I can't walk into the Walmart in my district and look people in the eye and say, I've been voting for you the way you want me to, then I shouldn't be up there. But we've got too many people in Washington that don't think that way.
I mean, it's got to be a good thing to say, okay, well, if you have something that's right for the district and a belief you have, and then a group comes and says, we really want you to support it, you got to feel inside, all right, okay, good, absolutely I'm going to support it. Because it's what was right for your district, right? I mean, that's the perfect thing, but it seems like a lot of times that the perfect's the enemy of good with some of these groups.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got to be 100% with them. I mean, in my Senate race, you know, I vote with Club for Growth 75% of the time, but 75% wasn't enough for them, and so they came out against me in my Senate race. Well, here's the truth. I mean, my wife doesn't agree with me 100% of the time, you know? It's human beings aren't like that. But when you're a congressman, you've got to say what's best for my people, the people I represent, not what's best for some group in Washington.
And that would be, I would get real specific here, because I want to talk about your endorsement of Jerry Carl here in the AL1 Republican primary runoff. But we'll talk about Club for Growth specifically. What I've heard is they would, if you voted for Austell and voted for Farmers in AL1, then you were violating whatever cardinal rule for them, so then you were on their bad list. Am I right?
That's right. That's right.
They would ask you to vote against Austell and a vote against the Farmers in South Alabama.
Yeah, okay. against the federal flood insurance program.
So,
which needs reforming. Don't get me wrong; it needs reforming. But I mean, people around here are dependent upon the federal flood insurance program. So, if I represent my people, I should be paying attention to that. And going back to this police issue, if I care about the people in my district and I want what's best for them, that I don't care what these outside groups say. I want to know what's best for the people in my district. And if the Democrats thought about this that way, they would leap across the aisle and say, let's get this deal done and get this bill passed and get to the president. And they just don't think that way because they got these outside groups that are pushing them.
And the outside groups will, because it has to be perfect versus good, then it seems so many times that nothing gets done.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, and, you know, there are times you have to compromise. I get that. I'm not against compromise. You don't compromise principles, but most of the time, what we're failing to compromise about is really not principle. It's how you do something, not what you're going to do, but how you do it. Well, I mean, there could be different ways of doing things. And it's like the qualified immunity. I think we could clarify the doctrine of qualified immunity and make that better for everybody. Put it in the statute. They just want to do away with it. I mean, that's not something you can compromise on. You can't really do anything about that.
Right. I'm looking at my text line right now, Congressman, and there's folks in law enforcement saying if we lose what they're saying is QI, we're going to quit.
Yeah, do you blame them?
No.
I mean, who wants to? I mean, this is not a fun job that they do. I mean,
nope.
When I go to work every day, I have a reasonable expectation I'm going to come home safe and sound. They don't have that. They go out there every day, and they literally don't know that they're coming home. As I say, over 80 of them died last year in the line of duty in the United States. And now we're going to let them be sitting ducks for lawsuits? Well, heck, of course they're not going to. I mean, of course they're going to walk away from it. And then who's going to get hurt? The people who are most likely to be the victims of crime are poor people. That's who's going to be hurt.
Let's talk about the endorsement here in this runoff, why you chose to support Jerry Carl.
Well, Jerry has the mindset that I said earlier, that the job is to represent the people of the 1st Congressional District. It's not to go, you know, represent some group in Washington. It's critical to have that understanding. Because otherwise, when you get elected, you just take your voting card and give it to the group. And let them, they'll just vote for you. Why bother to have a staff? Why bother to review the issues? They'll just tell you how to vote. I don't do it that way. as you know, I read all this stuff. My staff studies all this stuff. We talk to people back in the district. We get lots of help on it. And then we make up our minds where we stand on a given piece of legislation, just like we did on this Justice Act. But there, some of these groups up there just want you to just do whatever they tell you to do. And I'm sorry, that's not me. And I don't think that's doing the job right. Now, I don't think that's what people in Southwest Alabama want.
We've got about 30 seconds left. Can you give me any heads up on will there be any more changes for PPP coming or on the individual checks?
There might be, but not until July. We want to see how the present programs that we put out, the present money we put out there, we want to see how it's been used, how the economy's doing. We're getting some good reports on the economy. Let's see if things can continue to improve. I am concerned, you've heard me say this before, I'm concerned about how we're making the deficit go up. And I think we need to be very prudent in the next go-around, whatever we do.
Congressman Byrne, as always, I appreciate your time. We'll get you back on soon.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And good to have you as well. All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:36, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. I was about to talk about President Trump heading to Tulsa tomorrow and the hubbub around this, but why would I do that when it looks like... Can we go to it? Okay. So Kayleigh McEnany, a press secretary, having a presser right now. So let's get a part of that right now. Go to the feed.
As you can see, the Trump administration and the FDA led on identifying convalescent plasma as a therapeutic, and the results are encouraging. Finally, I wanted to share some words from President Trump. Juneteenth reminds us of both the unimaginable injustice of slavery and the incomparable joy that must have attended emancipation. It is both a remembrance of a blight on our history and a celebration of our nation's unsurpassed ability to triumph over darkness. That ability is rooted in the fundamental goodness of America and the truths upon which we as a nation declared an end to our status as the subjects of a monarch and emerged as a free and independent people. Those truths that all men are created equal by the hand of God, endowed by our Creator with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And with that, I'll take questions. Mario.
Thank you, Kayleigh. I'm wondering, given what we're seeing in markets and they're a little bit jittery given a rise in cases, any reason why the Coronavirus Task Force hasn't been coming out to update us? Will they? And then also, have they been consulted on the rally for tomorrow?
So the Coronavirus Task Force meets regularly. They're constantly reviewing data. They're constantly working with governors to ensure that we have safe reopenings across the nation. As for Coronavirus Task Force briefings, those happened in the very early days of COVID-19 and the pandemic. We were making major decisions on travel bans, major decisions on supplies and PPE and therapeutics. It was very important that those decisions be shared with the nation. Now we're in a more regular routine where when we see a spike or an ember, as the president calls them, we're able to quickly go and put it out. And we have that system in place. We don't have regular updates for you other than the updates I give you as news merits. And I'm regularly in consultation with Dr. Burks and the others. Yes, Steve.
Kayleigh, two questions for you. First, on the president's tweet this morning regarding the Tulsa rally, when he said, what did he mean when he said that any protesters wouldn't be treated like they were in New York, Seattle, and Minneapolis? Is the president indicating that the right to peaceably assemble should not apply to his rally?
No, that's not at all what he was saying. What the president was noting is that there were inexcusable scenes that we saw play out in New York and Seattle and Minneapolis, and that we would not see Tulsa, Oklahoma look that way. As the mayor Bynum noted, individuals from organized groups who have been involved in destructive and violent behavior in other states are planning to travel to the city of Tulsa for the purposes of causing unrest in and around the rally, and that was an unacceptable proposition. We will not see things like what we saw in Minnesota, where rioters lit an auto zone on fire, or also in Minnesota, where protesters torched a police precinct, or in Seattle, where they've now set up a place called CHOP. They've taken over a part of the city, anarchists have, or the pillaging or the ambushing of two NYPD police officers who were on looting watch. One was stabbed in the neck and then shot two other officers who later arrived on the scene. So those kinds of scenes are unacceptable, and we will not see that in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
He doesn't mean all protesters?
No, what he was meaning are violent protesters, anarchists, looters, the kind of lawlessness that we saw play out before President Trump came in with the National Guard and calmed our streets with law and order.
And just a second question, sorry. I'm DACA. The president again tweeted this morning that he was going to move ahead with trying to end that program. What is the time frame on that? When should we expect to see something from the Department of Homeland Security on that? And why is the president doing that, even when he has conceded that he believes that the immigrants who were brought here as children and no fault of their own should be taken care of?
So first, one note on DACA. One thing I would say about yesterday's ruling is that really this was a situation where you had all of the justices saying that President Trump was essentially right on the law on DACA. You had the majority and the majority opinion, quote, the dispute before the court is not whether DHS may rescind DACA. All parties agree that it may be rescinded. The dispute is instead primarily about the procedure the agency followed in doing so. So in other words, President Trump was right on the law here. It was unlawful the way President Obama went about this. But as for the way forward, I just was in and was speaking with the president and the chief of staff about this. And we're looking at documents currently, and we're going to move forward in a responsible way and cure some of the remedies and the unlawfulness that we see it with the previous memo that brought DACA into place. But we want to find a compassionate way to do this. So that's the notes I have as to how we'll be moving forward. Kristen.
Thank you, Kaylee. Now that we're about 24 hours away from this rally tomorrow in Tulsa, you have the World Health Organization director saying that the world is in a new and dangerous phase in terms of COVID cases. You have cases rising in Oklahoma. You have the Tulsa mayor declaring a civil emergency. Given all of this together, are there any discussions, any reservations within the West Wing about going forward with this indoor rally tomorrow in a state where COVID cases are on the rise?
Well, first, let me note about the civil emergency. Bynum declared a civil emergency after law enforcement informed the mayor about the individuals from the organized groups that I just noted who are intent on engaging in destruction. But with regard to Oklahoma, I would refer you to Governor Stitt's comments. He said yesterday we went to phase three on June 1st, so we're 56 days into our reopening plan, and currently we have under 200 people in the hospital across Oklahoma, and he welcomed the president and his supporters for coming.
But I guess my question is, behind the scenes, are there any White House officials, just expressing a bit of reservation about going forward 24 hours out?
So we are all on board with going to Oklahoma. We're taking appropriate measures like hand sanitizing and temperature checks and masks being provided at the door. But I'd also note to you from the governor of Oklahoma that he says that most of the cases he's seeing are in the 18 to 35 group, where they're seeing a slight increase, and they are asymptomatic individuals, a lot of what they're seeing. And in addition to that, I would also just note that he said that this slight increase was expected as they began to safely reopen 56 days prior. Hopefully, I'll limit you to 20 questions today. How about that?
Thanks, Kaylee. Will any White House officials be at the rally tomorrow?
There will be several White House officials at the rally tomorrow.
Will those officials, or will you be there, for example?
I will be there.
Will you and other White House officials be wearing masks at the rally?
It's a personal choice. I won't be wearing a mask. I can't speak for my colleagues.
And why won't you wear a mask? Is it sort of a personal political statement? Is it because the president would be disappointed in you if you don't wear a mask?
It's a personal decision. I'm tested regularly. I feel that it's safe for me not to be wearing a mask, and I'm in compliance with CDC guidelines, which are recommended but not required.
And if I can ask you about last night, the president tweeted out some fake videos, one of which was labeled manipulated media by Twitter. Why is the president sharing fake videos on Twitter about two toddlers who are obviously showing a lot of love for one another. It seems as though he's exploiting children to make some sort of crass political point. Why is he sharing fake videos?
He was making a point about CNN specifically. He was making a point that CNN has regularly taken him out of context, that in 2019, CNN misleadingly aired a clip from one viewpoint repeatedly to falsely accuse the Covington boys of being, quote, students in MAGA gear harassing a Native American elder. That's a harassing video, a misleading video about children that had really grave consequences for their future.
So you're saying it's okay to exploit two toddlers hugging one another on a sidewalk to make some sort of political point? As you know, the president has described members of the press as fake news during the course of this administration. When you share fake videos like that, doesn't that make you fake news?
I think the president was making a satirical point that was quite funny if you go and actually watch the video. I think the point is it was a play on CNN repeatedly taking the president out of context. Like the time when you guys had a chyron that read, "Trump slammed some illegal immigrants, they're animals." Well, guess what? The people we called animals were MS-13 illegal immigrants who regularly mutilate people in this country. Those things are entirely misleading.
You don't mind pointing out the president has referred to some Mexican immigrants as rapists. He has tried to pass a Muslim ban in this country. He has described black NFL players as sons of bitches if they take a knee during a football game.
That's an absurd attempt to justify the misleading headlines that are regularly on your network. Like I was just walking in watching CNN as they lauded the quote rallies in the streets.
Are you saying that the president
gotta let me finish, Jim? This isn't a cable news segment. I'm answering your question now from the White House podium. When I walk out here, Jim, and I see on your network. Celebratory headlines about the rallies and the protests outside. And you actually said protests and rallies. So in light of a protest, if these gatherings happen in light of a protest or a rally, as you say, that rally is to be condoned, but not the president's rally. I mean, it's appalling. You have one person on your network saying that this is a celebration in the streets, a carnival-like atmosphere. There's a guy with a sign that says free hugs. It's beautiful what's happening in the streets. There is music. People are hugging. You celebrate hugging in the context of a protest. But in a Trump rally where we celebrate historic low African-American unemployment, criminal justice reform, HBCUs, that rally is not allowed because guess what, Jim? It doesn't fit the ideological agenda of CNN. Peter Alexander.
Let me ask if I can, Kaylee. Why does the president keep hiring people who are dumb as a rock, overrated, way over their heads, wacko, and incompetent?
So the president makes hiring decisions based on the fact that he likes to have countervailing viewpoints. I spoke to him this morning about the hiring of John Bolton in particular, and he said, I like to counterbalance my own opinion with individuals that oftentimes have the very opposite opinion of my own. He likes the model of having a team of rivals, like what we saw in President Lincoln's administration. I've been a part of that. I often see rigorous debate, and the president uses his gut and makes the best decision as to how to move forward. So that's what goes into his hiring practices, and I think the team of rivals with President Lincoln worked quite well.
There's obviously value in hiring a team of rivals. It's worked well in the past, but then if you're going to hire rivals, why hire rivals who are dumb as a rock, overrated, way over their heads, wacko, and incompetent? How does that help?
Well, sometimes those rivals prove those labels to be true, and that's particularly true in the case of John Bolton, who repeatedly praised the president, then turned. He's been widely criticized by the New York Times for his book. I think John Bolton has proven himself to have those labels as true.
Let me follow up.
We're not going to get to everyone in the room. The 20-question rule applies to everyone.
So I'll take the 20 questions if it applies to everyone. Then I've only done two so far. For my third one, I'd like to ask, does the president support Juneteenth as a federal holiday? And yesterday, in an interview with the Wall Street Journal this week, the president was speaking about Juneteenth, and he said that nobody had ever heard of Juneteenth. What does that say about the president's relationship to the black community if he would say that when millions of African Americans in this country commemorated each year?
Well, look, what I would say is this president's routinely commemorated Juneteenth. The president, what he said is...
You said he learned about it this week.
No, he did not say that. As Secretary Carson emphasized, I talked to the president about the Juneteenth event. I was pleasantly surprised about how much he knew about it, the whole history of it. He did not just learn about Juneteenth that this week. That's simply not true. And as to Juneteenth, there were a lot of people who didn't know what Juneteenth was, and Google searches prove that. And you can see, I looked at the chart on Google searches on Juneteenth, and this year, they went like this, and that's thanks to President Trump. Yes.
I wanted to ask if the White House is planning to issue an executive order in the coming days to suspend visas for foreign workers, and any detail you can provide in terms of what types of visas, for how long that would last, etc.
So I have no announcements on that front today. I'm aware of the reporting, but no announcements.
Okay. Could I follow up quickly and ask if the president plans to take any health precautions at the rally tomorrow?
We are administering hand sanitizer, masks to those who are in attendance should they decide to wear them, and we are taking temperature checks. Dan.
Hi, Kaylee. Arizona has seen surging coronavirus cases, as well as Texas and Florida. Does the president think that they should all keep doing what they're doing, or is he concerned about, you know, this rise in cases and how to stop that?
This is a state-led reopening with the assistance of the federal government and our medical experts, so we're regularly consulting with each state. It's their decision as to whether they remain their reopening processes, but we're very confident that they will be able to get it under control. We've had CDC deploy teams to four states, and when we see these spikes in cases, a lot of times, and we're able to isolate them and stop the spread further. So with the help of the federal government, these states should be able to safely continue reopening, though it is their decision whether to do so.
And does the president, what does the president think of his niece Mary Trump's new book that's coming out?
Yeah, so on the Mary Trump book, what I would say is this. I haven't seen the book. The president hasn't seen the book, so I'm not going to sit here and speculate about what it may say or what it may not say. David.
Yeah, given all the hoo-ha over Tulsa, I mean, isn't the president taking a big risk this weekend? Because if things go south on Saturday, isn't that going to make it harder for him to schedule rallies in the future?
Look, I think that we are confident that we can operate safely in Tulsa. There are, as I noted at the beginning of this, Governor Stitt said under 200 people are in hospitals across Oklahoma. Most of those, a lot of those, between the ages of 18 and 35. So we're confident that we can do this safely, and we're very much looking forward to going to Oklahoma.
Why haven't y'all scheduled more rallies? Are y'all waiting to see how things turn out on Saturday?
That would be a question for the campaign. Yes.
Yes, thank you, Kaylee. Two quick questions. In an interview on NPR on Tuesday, Dr. Fauci said he hasn't spoken to the president in, quote, 2 weeks. Why have they gone so long without talking, and is this still a priority for the president, the virus?
Absolutely, it's still a priority. It's why the task force meets regularly. The president is given that information. The vice president has been leading on the task force, and the president ultimately makes the decisions and is constantly kept up to date with the latest numbers.
And then the second question, obviously, you know, the president is very against violent protest. He's spoken out specifically against anti-fascists who've been responsible for some of this violence. But in terms of his personal ideology, is the president an anti-fascist?
The president is absolutely anti-fascist. What he's against also is lawlessness. He's against anarchy. He's against what we've seen in our streets. He's against the fact that you have in a city block in Seattle, multiple city blocks taken over by anarchists. It's amazing. You have the Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best saying, quote, our 911 response times have tripled in the area. They've gone from just over 5 minutes to about 18 minutes. There have been rapes, robberies, and all sorts of violent acts that have been occurring. He's against fascism. He's against anarchism. And he is for rule of law and the American way. Christian.
Thanks, Kaylee. The EU nations are starting to ease their travel restrictions between their own borders. Is the president planning on rolling back the EU travel restrictions? He said back in May that he'll probably ease them out sometime in the future.
The president knows that the travel restrictions were a very important component to saving lives. Almost 3 million could have perished, and those travel restrictions were instrumental in taking early action and saving American lives. He monitors the data constantly. No plans now as to lifting those, but it's ultimately the decision of the president. He's guided by data and the safety and health of the American people.
And then yes. On China, sorry, they just announced that during the negotiations with Secretary Pompeo. They're going to accelerate their ag buys. They weren't meeting the phase one ag buys. Does this mean anything for a potential phase two deal? Obviously, to stall the coronavirus, but...
I have no announcements on that front. I haven't spoken to the president on that specific matter. Yes.
Back to DACA, if you would, please. After the Supreme Court decision the other day, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops issued a statement. I'll just read it briefly. Next, we urge the president and President Trump to strongly reconsider terminating DACA. Immigrant communities are really hurting now amidst COVID-19, and moving forward with this action needlessly places many families into further anxiety and chaos. Will the president consider the bishop's appeal to this?
Well, the president said to me, I'm going to take care of DACA far better than the Democrats ever did. Democrats had 2.5 years to make a deal on DACA. They didn't do it. He wants to take care of these individuals, but it needs to be done in a lawful way, and it needs to be done in accordance with assuring that our border is safe, that it's protected, that we have an end to lawless immigration and MS-13 and the havoc that we've seen wreaked in this country. So he's for a measured response, and he's offered deals to Democrats previously that have been rejected. So Democrats really seem to be using the DACA recipients as pawns, and that is despicable. Emily.
Thank you, Kaylee. Given that the campaign had attendees at the rally on Saturday sign a waiver to indemnify the campaign if they should get sick with the coronavirus, would the president consider starting or contributing to a fund for the sick or the bereaved if we see a spike in cases come out of the rally Saturday?
I think that's a hypothetical, and that's a speculative question.
Yes. Thank you, Kaylee. Looking towards the election, we know that the Biden campaign is pushing back on adding any additional debates to the schedule. How many debates would the president be willing to participate in?
Yeah, so the president talked about this yesterday. The president is happy to debate when given the opportunity. Right now there are 3 debates, and he's happy with that, but certainly if others were proposed, he'd be willing to look at them. And he very much looks forward to those debates. One thing I would note, and I think it's just very important, especially as we go into the weekend and we begin to look at some of the news coverage out there, is that I would encourage all of you to cover the protest in the same way that you cover the rally goers. It's really quite something when you look at this extraordinary video by Media Research Center and Newsbusters, where you have multiple hosts on MSNBC, CNN, and CBS boasting about the, quote, massive crowd. I mean massive. Tens of thousands of people, thousands and thousands, up to 200,000 people, they exuberantly exclaim. But then they have grave concerns about the size of the Trump rallies. You have MSNBC contributors saying social justice over social distancing. But when the president looks to celebrate the accomplishments for minority and communities in this country, our rallies are derided as breeding grounds for coronavirus, while Lawrence O'Donnell celebrates arm-in-arm protests. So I really think that we should have internal consistency here in the way we cover large crowds. We should be guided by science, not cherry-picking science, as I see all too often on the airwaves, especially from CNN.
Stay safe.
All right. So, and with that ending of the presser, Kaylee McEnany, and, you know, what she said there at the end is what so many of y'all had messaged in, like Terry. Said, I don't see the issue with President Trump's rally. It's voluntary. If thousands of people can take to the streets and scream, why can't his supporters? It's a good question. Talk about that one as well when we come back.